Hello and welcome to Her Ambitious Career, the success podcast for corporate women who want more from their lives and careers. Each week, we share career and leadership strategies to help you set stretching goals, own your value, build visibility and credibility, gain recognition, get paid, and confidently take your career to that next level. Whatever your ambition, let's do this thing. Now, here's your host and career success expert, Rebecca Allen.
Ladies, welcome on in. I'm delighted today. I have Emma Walsh with me, who's the CEO of Parents at Work, and also one of the founding partners of Family Friendly Workplaces. Welcome on in, Emma.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's good to be here.
So I met Emma about 15 years ago, I think it was, at a networking function. And we've been in the same sort of space for all this time. And I'm absolutely delighted, because this is such an interesting area where we need to be raising awareness of the issues that so many people have working in corporate Australia. Obviously, this applies to the world, but we're talking about specifically about Australia today. So can you talk to me a little bit about family-friendly workplaces, Emma? I know it's a sort of a certification program, right, for organisations to get involved in, to help them really establish norms, if you like, around how to support parents who are also working.
Yeah, sure. I would actually start by saying that it's really for all people, all families. We all belong to families. That's a really important point you raise, because often when we think about the context of family friendly and work, our minds do generally jump to working parents and children and mothers. And actually, that's part of what we're trying to do, is to change the conversation around, well, actually, belonging to a family is something that we all do. All of us have been born into this world with parents. We're cousins, we're aunts, we're uncles, we're nieces, we're nephews, we're parents. So it's really important to acknowledge that when we think about the way that we work, we don't do that in a vacuum. We all have an outside life that we have that we want to look after and nurture, and as we should, we need to think about how we do that in the context of developing our careers, in relation to fulfilling our job responsibilities. So family-friendly workplaces is about drawing attention to that, first of all. But it's also about recognising that when we think about the way that work is done in a post-pandemic world, it's changed. You know, the future of work, I say, has actually arrived. You know, some time ago, we've often thought about the future of work being something that's going to happen in a few years' time, in a decade from now. And, you know, we have this conversation about something that might happen. I really think that the need for workplaces to be much more family friendly, in the way, you know, more friendly policies and the way that we think about work is done, has to happen now. It's not something that we can put off to the future. And I would argue that actually this has been wanting for a very long time. Yeah. You know, really since the surge to have more women into the workforce, this conversation should have been had then. So this is a long overdue conversation around how we balance work and family life within organisations.
And you're right, because the pandemic has absolutely just highlighted what was already a massive problem in the first place in terms of gender imbalance and economic imbalance between men and women, and how difficult that is for the parents who actually both want to stay at home and both be at home to care for their children, and who also both want to have careers potentially. It kind of feels like we're lagging behind. You know, Europe has sort of policies in place and has had policies in place that are a lot more balanced. But we're starting to see that here now in Australia, aren't we? We're starting to see progression. Just recently, new legislation was passed in October that sort of, you know, spells the beginning of hopefully something much bigger to come.
That's right. As you rightly said, we did meet about 15 years ago when I began my journey, I guess, advocating in this space for better family-friendly workplace policies. And it's definitely been incremental change. But in many respects, it's been what I would call tweaking with the existing system. Yes. You know, a couple of additional weeks paid leave here from an organisation's point of view, or a little bit more flexibility over here. And, oh, I think we might need a domestic and family violence policy. Oh, and, you know, we should probably do some miscarriage leave. And all of those things are important. And all of those things have helped bring the conversation forward. But what's different in Australia compared to, let's say, Europe in particular, is we don't have a national work and care framework, something that, you know, or agenda led by government. And that framework would really be about setting how we think about family and work policy together. Very much in this country, those sort of policy departments have been quite separate and not something that necessarily the two have come together to meet on enough. We used to have an Office for Work and Family. We don't anymore. And so often the auspices of family-friendly and policy-making decisions within government that obviously influences workplace policy has come out more recently of the Office for Women. And whilst that's great, it constantly brings this back to being a woman's issue.
Yes.
And it's not a woman's issue. You know, it is an economic issue. It is a community issue. It is a business issue that we all have to lean into to solve. And so I'm really pleased to see that there is a stuff, you know, to see this conversation around the caring economy being recognised. And I think for many of us through the pandemic, we recognise that caring is a vital service and we can't do without it. You know, whether it's nurses, doctors, teachers, parents, etc. Our community needs to be cared for. It's a job and someone needs to do it. And there is a big part of what makes, you know, sustainable society. And I think we've undervalued that for far too long. So this is really great that we're having this bigger structural system conversation changes around how do we value the caring economy? How do we need to invest in it? And not make it, I think, the individual's problem, which we've been largely doing in many respects here.
Yeah, or gendered.
Yes.
Because I think that's the fundamental kind of thing, isn't it? So little really of what goes on in the world is gendered. It's breastfeeding and it's childbearing. I mean, that's literally it. And then the rest of it is open to everybody. So for example, you know, I can see that ING, for example, and Deloitte and QBE are already invested in family-friendly workplaces and are essentially accredited through your systems, if you like. Could you talk a little bit about the criteria, if you like, that an organization would need to demonstrate to actually get that stamp of approval, if you like, as being a family-friendly culture?
Sure. So as I just mentioned, because we don't have a national work and family policy agenda or framework that government, if you like, has published and really recommended employers invest in, it's hard to know what does constitute family-friendly workplace policies and what does good look like and what's included in that and how do we know what other organisations are doing and what should we be doing is really what we're trying to solve for. So we united with a number of different community and business partners to come up with a set of national work and family standards for workplaces. And really what these are minimum standards that we think are required from organisations that would satisfy the ability for them to be started to be considered a family-friendly organisation and to be invested in that. Those standards are freely available to have a look at on the Family Friendly Workplaces website, which we can share later. And the reason we've done that is we want to make them extremely public and accessible so that an organisation can go and look at those and go, you know, where do we stand on those things? Do we have a paid parental leave policy? Do we have a carers policy? What's our flex policies looking like? And we've made it accessible to a point that you can actually go and do a readiness check and benchmark yourself against some of those minimum standards. And what that's doing is it's allowing organisations to get some immediate feedback around where it is that they might be, where they might have a shortfall. And what that allows them to do at that point is to go away, to have a think about what they might need to do, to put in place, to invest in, to think about and do in order to come back and be certified as an organisation that is family inclusive. So it's a good self-determined process, which is good because we recognise that each workplace is different and how they're going to, what they're ready for and where they're at and their starting point is different. And so partly what we're doing is providing knowledge and education around what good looks like and what they should be doing. On the other end of the certification, it's not a destination. We know so many of these organisations would be the first to put their hand up and say, we're learning organisations, we're not perfect at this. So it was really important for us that family-friendly workplaces was about committing employers to improvement over time, continuous action and development. So a part of it is a requirement to put a work and care action plan together once you're through the certification process and commit to delivering on that action plan over a two-year period so that they can see some continuous improvement. But more than that, they can actually measure their own impact. They can see the difference it's making in their organisation, and so can we. And I think that that's a really important component of this.
Yes, absolutely. I think that tangible action plan is so, so important because, you know, it's very easy to jump on buzzwords, isn't it? And very easy to sort of say, oh, yes, we're inclusive, and yes, we're sort of gender inclusive or whatever it might be. But it's really important to actually have the strategies in place to show that you're actually delivering against those strategies. And it's not just sort of hot air. Yes. A lot of the conversations that I have are around that, you know, well, my company says this, they do this and they'll do this for us, but those things don't actually happen. So I think to have benchmarking is so, so important so that you can understand what you actually need to be looking at and thinking about from a policy perspective. But also then, okay, great. How do we actually implement this? How do we actually bring this to make this a reality, and how do we actually show that employees within this organization that this matters to us deeply?
Yes, absolutely. You know, all of the research and evidence that we've collected over time, and we've developed a social impact framework that underpins this, is that it's not just about good policy. It's actually not just about great practices or processes that support that policy. It's actually about how well those policies are taken up, you know, how accessible they are, how well they're promoted from a cultural perspective, that people feel that it's safe to use them.
Yes.
And that they are able to avail of them, and that there's not a negative impact on their careers or family life when they do. So I can't stress highly enough the importance of the promotion piece. So we talk about those three P's: policy, practice, and promotion. And without them, you're not going to have the impact. So a policy enough on it, you know, on its own right is not enough. And that's good, because there's a number of employers that I think are a little complacent around, well, you know, we pay 16 weeks paid parental leave, tick. Yes. And that's it, you know. And to me, some of those organisations are probably wasting their money, because really they're not backing up those policies at all with good practices that actually allow parental leave genuinely to be accessed by all employees, genuinely to be experienced and be supportive in the way that, you know, is going to be helpful to that employee. A lot of companies are not getting feedback from their people around how effective are their policies. So we spend a lot of time in organisations asking people if they're happy and to fill out an engagement survey. But not many organisations are going to their employee base and asking, you know what, does our flex policy and does our parental leave policy and caring policy and practices, you know, they cut the mustard. Are they delivering for you the way that you would like them to deliver? And if not, why not? What can we do about it? There's only a few companies that I see bother to actually go to that level of detail and get feedback on employee policies.
Mm. And like you say, that concept of psychological safety, I think, is so important. Being comfortable actually taking what's basically being given to you, an opportunity to say, take parental leave. If you've got senior leaders within the organization who are also doing that, sort of walking the talk and demonstrating the policy themselves, if they're kind of, you know, publicly advocating for these policies, then, like you say, it creates that psychological safety that this is okay and this is actually acceptable in this culture, and this is actually celebrated in this culture, because we recognize that people have lives outside of work, and, you know, that, like you say, there's this huge caring economy that's running alongside our market economy, and all the time we need to be thinking about the balance of both, you know, retain good talent and keep people within the organization.
That's right. And I think that's what's going to win the argument over, actually, in the long run. There will potentially be some recalcitrant employers that come along for the ride on this. So, we're going to have to offer more family-friendly workplace policies and practices, because at the end of the day, the war for talent is immense.
It's huge.
And we know, I mean, year on year, this can't be a surprise to employers. You know, the number one thing that people are looking for is good flexibility, good work-life balance, organizations that allow them to invest in their own well-being.
Yeah.
So all of this that we're talking about is about delivering on those things.
Yeah. And it's about being competitive at the end of the day. And I always think it's so interesting how much time and energy and investment goes into being sort of technologically competitive, staying ahead of the game and being like the number one company doing whatever. And yet the people question is the biggest question we've got of all. And if you really want to genuinely be competitive, you have to look at the staff and the talent that you've got within and nurture it and support it and, you know, maintain its loyalty. Otherwise, you're going to be dead in the water, I think.
Well, that's right. I often think about this, and I understand I'm an employer too. So I understand the challenges that exist around trying to balance employee needs around family with work deliverables. It's tough. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that if you don't work with it, you're actually working against it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think the common sense person in me says you want to work with it, not against it.
Yes.
And so how can we think that with a collaborative mindset around how do we get the best outcome out of what we've got available to us at any one given time?
Absolutely.
And I think that way of thinking allows us to be really agile as an organization, still cut wastage because no one has time for that. And so I would argue that, you know, a lot of this has made our organization much more efficient. I mean, I think people are quite surprised. They'll note the work that we're doing and they go, but how big are you? and they're quite surprised by the small team we have doing
yes.
amazing work. And many of them work flexibly and part-time. So I know what's made possible if you can work with this, not against it.
Lovely. So Emma, you know, if you're an organization and this is really resonating, you're thinking, mm-hmm. I would really, really like to understand more about this, they can obviously go to the Family Friendly Workplaces website, which we'll make mm-hmm. sure is linked in the show notes. And then you say you can kind of do your own self-assessment on how you think you're tracking. Say, for example, mm-hmm. you are an individual within an organization and you're listening and you're thinking, actually, this is something that we really should implement within our organization. I would love to spearhead this. I'd love to be somebody who brings this to the table. How could an individual go about doing that?
Yeah, I actually get asked this question quite a lot. It's not uncommon for me to get sort of connections randomly on LinkedIn, for example, where people say, oh, I really like what you're talking about. How do I get this across the line in my organization? I have anonymous people come to me that I want to be anonymous, but how can you, they're almost giving me tip-offs about their organization. And could you get in touch with them? So it's really interesting. And so always I talk about making the business case, because for many employers that don't have this on the radar, to me, they don't understand the business case. That's the first thing. So that means we need to gather the right materials and the right evidence and the right research and the right case studies to be able to say, see, this makes business sense. And that really, Family Friendly Workplaces has really tried to do that. We share lots of research notes and research. We actually have videos of different leaders from, you talked about some of those organizations that we're working with. We've been quick to interview, video, hear straight from their mouth that this is really important. So it's not just that we think this is good.
Yes.
Other business leaders are talking about this is good.
There's
case studies, all different types of examples of what organizations have done on the website. So gather your evidence is the first thing, because there's nothing like a little bit of FOMO that to drive an executive's behavior on change. The second thing is to try and get a voice to this. So how do you get feedback from others in an organization, in the organization you're working for, that actually this is necessary?
Yeah.
That actually not just you, but a number of you have thought about this and have talked about this. So if you're working in a slightly bigger organization, it's probably highly likely that you have an HR team or a diversity and inclusion team. And so how can you approach those teams to go, oh, I just wondered, are you working on this at all? Is this somewhere in your agenda? I think it would be really interesting if it was, and I would love to be part of that conversation. I'd be willing to help on that, push that conversation forward. So don't be afraid to do that, and particularly if it comes with an offer of help, because actually being, you know, an HR practitioner myself, many HR and D&I teams are often under-resourced. They're really busy. They've got a long list of things that they're being asked to deliver on in an organisation, and it's not that they don't think that what you're talking about is important. It just might be that it's number five on the list resourced, and that you're looking to bump it up on the list of importance for them. So a great way of doing that is to say, I'd be willing to help you with it if you need some help with it. And so I think if that that's a great way of opening up the door to that conversation. And, you know, there is always, you know, the third one, which is voting with your feet. So if you don't feel that your organisation, you know, you've tried a few things and you're not seeing a whole lot of movement on this, I guess that's your opportunity to say, okay, well, clearly there's a culture here, and the culture message is this that I'm receiving back. How does that fit with the culture of an organisation I really want to work for? Because actually the longer we put up with some of these cultural norms in organisations by just staying and putting up with it, the longer they get away with it. So I'm not saying that that's an option for everyone, but I do think exercise your right to look around. You know, you don't have to stay putting up with some of these policies in organisations, and there's nothing like a little bit of attrition that makes an organisation change its policies and practices.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's huge value in not settling for, you know, opportunities or non-opportunities, or settling for, you know, being in a culture that's toxic, or settling for a culture that is not supporting you and your growth and your progression, which is something that I come across a lot in my business. It's, you know, I just feel like I'm being blocked and there are just no opportunities. I don't hear about the opportunities. You know, other people seem to get promoted around me, but I didn't even know that there was an opportunity. So, you know, there are these kinds of things that happen where people just get sort of stonewalled. And like I say, you know, like you're just saying, you know, it's why settle for that? Why put up with that? You know, it's kind of if you can and you see that there's opportunity outside, you know, look and start having those conversations with your network and start talking about what, you know, your interests are and your expertise are and, you know, where you want to move next in your career. Because I think you're right. I think we put up too much with thinking that this is norm. And if we do that, then it is the norm, you know.
I would say don't underestimate the power of one voice either. I have seen time and time again one passionate advocate in one organization deliver amazing things. So don't think that your voice can't influence change within your organization. I can't promise that it will, but definitely don't count it out that it can't or it won't, because you won't know until you start to exercise that voice. And so I know that we can tend to think, oh, it's all just too hard, I'm just going to go with the status quo. But I think if you can come at it with a collegiate, helpful attitude of, oh, I think we should be thinking about this and it's on my mind and actually I'd be willing to lend a hand if we were to try and improve some of this stuff, I think that goes a long way. And it'd be interesting to hear what they say.
I think that's 100% true. And I just think it's such a powerful way to end, because I think too many people, I think, do feel powerless in these circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, well, what if I'm working 100-hour weeks, I hear? You know, what if I'm being asked to go above and beyond? What if I'm being asked to sort of do two roles, Rebecca? You know, these kinds of conversations. What do I do then? It's like, well, you do actually have a choice. You do actually have a voice. And I think you're so right. You know, the power of one person, it can just make seismic differences to what actually happens. But you have to have the bravery just to have the conversations and start the ball rolling, right? And I think the advice is really sound, you know, to create the business case, to look for the actual evidence to support the reasoning why your organization would really benefit from this, and how really it's affecting the whole organization. It's not just affecting one small group even. It's such a massively beneficial set of policies for everybody. Everyone wins. And if you can be the person who champions that, my goodness, you know, that's such an incredible kind of confidence thing for you, but also such an amazing thing to talk about and to share with other people and have on your CV and all those things. You know, I think it's wonderful for building your sort of presence and your brand and all that sort of stuff. It's really, really valuable.
Agree. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I really, really appreciate it. Are there any links that you would like to include that we can put into the show notes at all for people to get that access to the evidence and the information that you mentioned earlier?
Yes, definitely. All of it can be found on the Family Friendly Workplaces website. So that's www.familyfriendlyworkplaces.com.
Fabulous. Thank you, Emma. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Yes, you too, Rebecca. Thanks for having me. Hope it's been helpful.
I'm so grateful for Emma for coming on the show today. Thank you, Emma. I'm so excited to have people come on the show who are championing the cause for people out there who are looking for more flexibility and more inclusivity in their workplaces, whether you're a parent or not, whether you're caring for elderly relatives or not, whether you're just looking for greater work-life balance. I think these conversations and questions are so important that we air and we talk about and we share. So if you've got thoughts and feedback and ideas about this, you can find us on our Facebook page, for example. You can find me on LinkedIn. Just look for Rebecca Allen, career coach. Let's have a conversation. I'm always really open and honest about having great conversations about topics that matter and that help champion women. So if you are looking for support in your career, I would absolutely love to open up the doors to you and welcome you in too, because that's where we absolutely thrive and where we add our greatest value. We have the most incredible free download. It's called The 7 Habits of Female Execs Who Get Promoted. And you can get that by just going to rebeccasfreegift.com and it will just come straight to your inbox. It is crammed with strategies around personal branding and how to build your credibility and your visibility within your company. And that is true whether or not you work in an environment that is currently stifling you, or in an environment where your opportunities are slightly mediocre, where you feel like you're not getting the best out of you or your opportunity. So if you want to get your hands on that tool, it's fantastic. It's our most popular download. Just head to rebeccasfreegift.com and you'll be able to get your copy straight away. I look forward to seeing you next week, where we will, of course, be talking about another really important topic to do with corporate women and helping corporate women thrive. Thank you so much for joining me. It's an absolute pleasure as ever, and I'll see you next week.